I have a question for you.
You may ask the question.
We are a week removed from some craziness.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. This will be, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot happens in a week.
Oh, it sure does. Because
especially in our COVID carnival, which has begun.
Because I originally had something else completely planned to, put out this week, but obviously that got trumped by
Trump.
We
have to keep our listeners fully engaged and informed.
So if you lived under a rock, which I really highly doubt you do, the Capitol building was stormed some rioters, pro-Trump rioters.
Correct.
All heck kind of broke loose for a couple of hours. And everyone is pointing fingers and saying, hey, look, they didn't treat the same as the way the Black Lives Matter protests were treated. Which is kind of interesting to me because their whole idea was police brutality is bad. You should let people do what they need to do to vent out frustrations. And then when police brutality didn't happen, they were upset that police brutality didn't happen. That's a whole nother topic. Well, I want to get that.
They did shoot somebody to death.
They did. Absolutely did. But
So that happened.
And tear gas came out and they were beaten back. But nonetheless, if your object of your movement was to reduce police brutality and reduce the altercations with police, specifically for members of, the African American community, but overall you want police brutality to go down against anybody. And then they didn't show brute force, and you're upset they didn't show brute force. Aren't you just a little bit of a hypocrite? Sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent that I need to get out of for a second.
Yes, you need to get out of that tangent.
Yes, I am done with that tangent.
That one's a tough one because, people are going to get fired for equating Black Lives Matter protests with what happened at the Capitol.
Yes.
So spicy meatball.
I wasn't equating them the two because they're completely different in my mind.
Sure.
I'm throwing a hissy fit because I lost an election, and one is I'm throwing a hissy fit because there's injustices in this world. Mm-hmm. One's more just than the other in terms of what buildings got rioted. Or, broken into. I'm a little more happy that the Capitol got broken into than, a private business.
Ooh.
Here's why.
Okay, good. Okay, go ahead, Andrew.
Here's why. Part of me believes that you as an American citizen and you as a taxpayer should be able to walk into two buildings in D.C. at any given moment with some caveats. The White House and the Capitol building. Because your tax money pays to fund those people. Your tax money pays to fund those buildings. You, as an American citizen, should be able to see what you voted for working for you in your favor live and in person. This, the certification of an election, is always a historic moment. Because either a new president is taking over or the old president is getting 4 more years. So why are you afraid to let people in the gallery to watch this?
You couldn't fit them all.
Well, yeah, you couldn't fit them all, but you could at least, raffle off tickets.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of governmental transparency. I know that sounds a little un-American.
Sounds a little weird.
Yeah, well, in terms of the government, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. What branch of government is still treated with the highest regard and respect?
The presidency.
Well,
not right now, but normally it is. Here's the interesting thing. When the founders put together this idea, the three branches of government and overseeing each other, the Speaker of the House was supposed to be the quote-unquote equivalent to the highest archy anywhere else, right? They were the true quote-unquote leaders of the land, whereas the president was a figurehead that kind of did the diplomatic stuff, but still had to go through the House and the Senate, which is why the Speaker of the House was supposed to be the more affluential person in the government. But that all got changed somehow, way, shape, or form, that the president is, top tier, top dog
I actually don't think the executive branch is the most revered. I actually think it's the judicial. I think it's the Supreme Court.
How so?
Because here's where you go. The Supreme Court is the last. The buck stops with the Supreme Court.
Right.
It doesn't stop with the executive branch. It doesn't stop or even begin with the legislative branch today. The words of the laws don't matter anymore. What matters is who interprets the words of the law, because we don't have a respect for language anymore as a country. We just make up words to mean whatever we want them to mean. And here's where the Supreme Court is brilliant. They don't allow in television cameras, right? When they come up with a decision, it's like electing a pope, right? No one says anything until someone comes out, hear ye, the Supreme Court justices have declared. And then they're brilliant in that way. And so I actually think the most powerful branch of government the most revered has been the Supreme Court, because one, these guys aren't elected. Two, and so they're not campaigning all the time. Two, they don't let in video cameras. I think when you see the absurdity of what happens in the Congress, no one likes the Congress, because the Congress, I think, is far too transparent. They have increased the amount of arguing time. Here's what you do when you're in the Congress, because I used to intern there. Your goal is, if you're a senator in the Congress, is to drum up a bunch of media buzz about something you're passing or not passing or whatever, to get playtime back at home in your district or your state so that you get reelected. That's the whole game of Congress. And so it's just a bunch of show. I'll never forget when they came up with C-SPAN. House representatives don't even need to be present when other representatives are speaking. So like Newt Gingrich was down there, and he's giving this impassioned, back in the 90s, or was it? It was the 2000s. Anyway, he's giving this impassioned speech on the floor of the House. And you know how many people were there?
Like three.
Zero. It was just him. Rah, 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 rah. But it looked like any normal time, because it was funny because the camera was focused on him. And then C-SPAN panned to the rest of the House, and there's nobody there. But it doesn't matter. Why? So what I think would be better is if you close the House and the Senate and said, there are no cameras in here anymore, we're going to just talk plainly with each other. And you would get a lot more done if you weren't always having some camera over your shoulder that you have to play to. And I think a lot of what was happening in the Congress and the Senate that probably led up to all of this hullabaloo was playing to the cameras, you know? And imagine what I'm going to go really off on a tangent here. Imagine if the president was not elected by the people. Some listeners may say, well, that's what's happening now, Father. But here's the point. If he was just selected like we select a pope, right? If you just got all the governors together, this used to be the idea of the Electoral College, but you get all the governors together, and you say, okay, you guys know how to do executive stuff because you've been executing your states for a while. You guys go in a room for... And don't come out until you select one of your own to be the president of the United States. Good luck. Godspeed. And we can just avoid a lot of this chaos. So I'm actually quite quite undemocratic. But that's also
now,
because
how
I'm,
much of this is because you're a priest now?
No, I don't like the I don't like how we're in constant campaign mode all the time as a country. It's just exhausting. It's just exhausting.
It really is.
And if we do it like the British do with the prime minister, or some way where we've got too much, trying to hold a national election for the president of the United States is too difficult to do. So I'm all a fan of governors get together. I mean, imagine, you saw how Governor Cuomo and who's that other governor from Maryland? Larry Hogan. There's a civility there. They kind of know that. And then you'd have people who have experience governing governments. Now you could also say, well, that's no good. We need to drain the swamp. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, that's a tall order to drain. I mean, that ain't going to be easy. So the only way you drain the swamp is
vote everybody out.
Is to starve the swamp. Which means you got to just not give the swamp as much money. I mean, growing up here in Northern Virginia, It's been amazing to watch how much bigger the houses have gotten over the last 30 years. I mean, it is astounding, just these palatial estates. There was no concept of K Street back in, you know, when I say K Street, it's where all the lobbyists are. My father is a lobbyist, or was a lobbyist, so I was familiar with that world, and it was just astounding to me. Just the way it works is you've got all these big companies that pay tons of money to former Congress people or staff or whatever, or Washingtonians who are well-connected, to leverage their influence to pass legislation that is favorable to those industries. How would this work? You would have you'd work in the Congress for a while, maybe in your 20s and your 30s, but no one wanted to stay in the Congress because you're not making any money as a staffer. So then you go and be a lobbyist in your 40s and your 50s. And then you're making the real dough, the real cheddar.
The real money.
Yeah, the real money. And but this is the cycle of Washington. And the thing is, if you're a Washingtonian, everybody's in on it, right? So whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, it doesn't really matter. Who wins the debate, it doesn't really matter. As long as you're able to keep the lifestyle going that Washingtonians who've gotten their Potomac fever can continue to enjoy. And I got to tell you, the amount of wealth in this area has skyrocketed over the last 30 years. And again, the more confusing you make government, the more valuable your lobbyists are who can navigate that, and the more they get paid. So it's a mess. Why am I going off on this tangent? I'm sorry. I've talked too much. I will now silence myself.
Tribalism.
Yes.
That's all it really is anymore.
Now it is on a national level. Again, your deep state Washingtonians recognize the game that is played. I think if you look at President Trump, he was an outsider to that game. And Trump was primarily concerned, I think, honestly, maybe people will get upset by this, but, primarily I think he initially did this because he wanted to be president of the United States, right? That's what he wanted to do. But I think he also recognized, and I think this is, in a way, as a lot of other politicians didn't, was the anger of people who didn't live in Washington or New York, or any of
the major hubs.
The major hub. I mean, it is interesting. If you're a wealthy person living in D.C., there's a place for you to move to in San Francisco. There's a place for you to move to in Denver. There's a place for you to move in Austin or New York. And they've all got their own little districts where the wealthy people live. Not the local people necessarily, who are dependent upon that area for their sustenance. But, you know, and and you see among the elite that there is a, how do I put this? Among the elite, there's just this sense of not belonging to a particular neighborhood, right? There's a sense of I can get up and move, or the people I will hang out with in Washington will be the same sorts of folks who are in New York, or the same in Boston. It's own little cadre. It's not like they all know each other, but it's the same cultural milieu where people will make decisions today. Well, I like the lifestyle in this city, so I'm moving there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's
I like the vibe the city gives off.
Yeah, exactly. You hear that kind of talk. I think that's partly what's going on. To get back to the storming of the Capitol, I think you have a lot of, and here's what I find probably as a priest the most upsetting is people aren't listening to each other.
Oh, absolutely not.
It's astounding to me. I mean, I preached on a phenomenon called ideological possession over the weekend about what happens when you become ideologically possessed is you care more about your ideas than you care about the person you're speaking that idea to. You know what I mean? And it's just like you try to have a conversation with this. This is why I think the long form of podcasting is so much more successful than your crossfire interviews on CNN, right?
Yeah, because they're 3-minute interviews, and a lot of times it feels like just like they're trying to get the gotcha question
correct.
Across.
And they're just barking at each other. And again, CNN is part of the old swamp game, right? We don't care whether or not, you know, at the end of the day, they don't really care who's in office or who's not. They don't really care about policy. They care about ratings.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
that's every news station, though.
That's CNN.
That's Fox, MSNBC.
But they also recognize their clientele. So, CNN will say, like, what's the news that we should broadcast that will please our liberal viewers? Fox News will say, what's the news that we should broadcast to please our conservative viewers? And again, I think probably what the storming of the Capitol revealed to me, along with all everything that happened over the summer with all the riots and the protests, was people have lost their trust in the media almost completely.
I've seen two things. Either they've lost their trust in the media completely, or they've put...
They doubled down on it?
They doubled down on it, yeah. And now they worship the media. And there's... You can't tell me CNN's ever been wrong, because if CNN is, you know, you just listen to Fox News too much, or you know, oh, you stop watching whatever, because they're just liars. And it's like, they're all liars. Every single one of them are.
Well, yeah, I think here, and this gets to an old subject I think is probably the most important, is, so where is truth found, right? Is it found on MSNBC? Is it found on Fox News? Is it found on CNN? And here's why I think we've broken down as a society, and we'll continue to break down, is because we are not a people who are capable of reasoning anymore.
No.
And because reasoning implies that there is a common truth that we can reason to. And classically, you would find that common truth in the mind of God. But if you don't believe in transcendent reality, like God, justice, truth, goodness, then you can't reason towards that. And we talked about this in the podcast regarding Black Lives Matter. You know,
yeah.
Why do lives matter at all? Because they're made in the image and likeness of God. There's something transcendent about the human life itself, which of course abortion would call into question, because abortion would say, "Well, no, it's not. Right? It's just another species of animal, and therefore we can kill our young."
So then in that, okay, I'm not going to go down that path again.
I know. But here's it's. This all comes back to the heresy of modernism again. But you'll see that with the storming of the Capitol, which has been interesting with President Trump. He's like, we're the party of law and order. We're supposed to be about law and order. And they're like, well, whose law? Whose order? Eventually in terms of the storming of the Capitol. And so...
My law and my order. So I'm going to go take over my law and my order.
Yeah. And so it's a mess right now, because everybody, right or left of the political spectrum, there's such a very slim, almost non-existent portion of the population that actually believes that it actually knows how to use their reason to come to know truth. I've been saying this for, oh my gosh, about a decade now. It's just not possible this leads to war. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure what kind of war. That's my kind of question mark, kind of could look a little bit like Bosnia, unfortunately, because it's kind of a religious war at this point. In terms of, you've got, and not in terms of serving God,
right?
But in terms of, both sides are ideologically possessed.
Serving their ideology,
serving their tribe.
Yeah,
right. Our God is better than your God, and then what about the God who created the universe? Irrelevant, right? Here's our Messiah figure. Follow him into battle. Here's our Messiah figure. Well, I'm wondering who that would be. I think the left would have their messiah figure would probably be more. There's a greater multitude of them. There's like really the celebrities, you know,
yeah.
whoever Hollywood has ordained to be their priests would be the ones that they would follow.
I would say Tom Cruise, but he's a Scientologist, so
he's lost favor. So I don't think he would be the one. It's interesting if I really try to pinpoint who in the celebrity cast would be the new Oprah comes to mind somewhat, but it still doesn't have a lot of cachet. You know, it was interesting. I was talking with a priest friend of mine who was really upset by the storming of the Capitol, and we got into a conversation. I said, "Is there a symbol in the United States which has the gravitational pull to unite us as one anymore?" And we had a tough time thinking of anything. The only thing that might still, although it's questionable, would be the Constitution. It still has a bit of that weight. The flag, unfortunately, does not.
No.
Which is very sad. We both, as priests, we still have the absurd hope that the symbol can be the cross, that can unite people together, you know.
We would hope.
Yeah, we would. And by that, you know, I would say fidelity to the nation is important, but fidelity to God is even more important. And
because unfortunately, there are tribes even in the Catholic communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You would hope that as Catholics, we'd be able to talk to each other, but that's even getting hard to do because mm-hmm. then you get people who understand the theology of things mm-hmm. and understand the writings and the teachings of popes and of doctors of the church. But then you get the people who are like the during Vatican II type Catholics that are more like hippies.
Yep.
I guess is the easiest way to say is the most way to say it. It's all love, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting as these things have proceeded as a priest. You know, I was I was talking with a priest friend of mine who tends to be more right on the political spectrum, and he was saying we were talking about this other priest, and he's like, how on earth can he continue to be a priest if he's so on the left on things? How is that even possible? Da, 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 da. And I go, well, you know what? This particular priest is really into loving people. And he goes, and he paused, the guy on the right, and he goes, well, you know, maybe this love thing has something to do with our religion. and I thought, that's pretty clever.
Well, you think?
That's pretty clever. Well, you know, we're forgetting that. You know, we're forgetting that. We're becoming more concerned about whether we receive the Eucharist on the hand or the tongue than we do about loving God with all our heart, soul, and strength, and our neighbor as ourself. And so what I would say is even in Catholic world, people are ideologically possessed, right? They're like, you have to say the Mass in this way, Father, or you can't do Latin, or you must do Latin, right? You got the camps, and they get their ideological bailiwicks. And here's how we break it. Here's how we break the ideological possession. We help people develop personal relationships with God where they learn to communicate with God on their own. We teach them how to pray. And then everything.
So that is easier said in the Catholic world and in the Protestant world. For I would say a majority, you know, 80-90% of, you know, people mm-hmm. who go. But the atheistic world, to try to convince them that there is a God that they need to love with all their heart, all their body, their soul, their mind.
It's funny you bring this up. One of our listeners will enjoy this particular thing that I'm going to bring up. It is possible to teach atheists and agnostics how to pray. You'd be like, what?
Explain yourself, good sir.
Yes. So, if you can get an atheist or agnostic to at least begin to engage in reflection on their own, to think for themselves, you've done a world of good. You know, because my homily today was Jesus unplugged from Jerusalem to put himself, to go to the, get baptized by John, to go put himself in a position where he could listen to the voice of God. And this is what I encourage those who are, if they're atheists or agnostics, listening to this podcast. I'm not saying you got to accept or assent to the creed, right? What I'd like you to do is to journal out a conversation between you and your creator, whatever name you want to give them, right? And do this as an imaginative exercise and see what comes up. I think Socrates did precisely this, or Plato did this precisely this in his dialogues. That's what we're kind of hoping for, is for that back and forth to live a more examined life. So you're not just an ideologically possessed, non-player controlled person in the world. You know, you want to have your individuality. You want to be able to think for yourself. You don't want to just be another pawn in some ideological shepherd's chess match. You know what I mean? This goes on the right and the left. So if you're like, well, Trump said this, so we have to do that. I'm like, okay, well, can you think on your own and come to your own conclusion there? Can you critically engage that? Or, you know, oh my gosh, this is the new thing that we heard about on CNN that we have to believe, so we have to believe it. I'm like, okay, well, are you able to critically engage that? Or do you just go along with it just because you're trying to be popular? So actually, I don't know if envy is really the root emotion of ideological possession. I think it's primarily fear, and fear of being ostracized or not being part of the tribe that you would think is, because people aren't coming to rational conclusions going, well, this clearly is wrong because of X, Y, Z, right? It's, I got to get on board with what everybody is saying because I don't want to be left out, right? I don't want to get kicked off Twitter. I don't want to get kicked off social media. I don't want to get kicked out of the world of big tech. I don't want to lose my job. And so a lot of people do that out of fear and don't really think for themselves, which you can't have a democracy if you can't have your citizens think for themselves. Because then whoever coaches the people how to think as they will have the power. And again, this is why the media is, I have to admire in terms of their totalitarian nature. They have this ability just to get people to think how they want to think. And you know what? It's funny. Back in 2015, Pope Francis's rise to popularity terrified me. And you'd be like, why? You're a Catholic father. Why? Well, and I like Pope Francis, right? And so
He's the Pope.
And so as a Catholic, everybody's kind of excited because this guy is so incredibly popular. This is great. Oh my gosh, everybody loves him. His incredible rocketing to stardom back in 2015, to where he comes and he gives a speech on the floor of the Congress. Really, what did he do? What did he do to earn such recognition? And it was primarily his symbolic gestures, right? He didn't live in the Apostolic Palace. He went and said Mass with the prisoners, right? He did all these things. Were very symbolic, right?
Right.
He said Mass with the downtrodden. So people, he rode around in a Fiat as opposed to a limousine. So people were just enamored with that. And truthfully, his love of simplicity and his love of poverty is Christ-like, absolutely. But here's the thing that troubled me the most. It wasn't anything that he said. It was only any words that he might have, you know, proclaimed. It wasn't because of these theological insights or philosophical insights or thoughts. But the media just made him their darling. And I thought to myself, if the media can build a person up that quickly and get everybody to follow him that quickly, they can do the exact same thing. They can tear down a person immediately and destroy a person immediately. It gave me a real sense of back in 2015, the power is not in the Capitol. It's not in the White House. It's not in the Supreme Court. The power is in the media, because the media tells how the people how to think, and then they think according to who the media that they follow. And so if you can get, first you get the media, then you get the people, then you get the women, right? Like in Scarface.
Yes.
Yes. So, so that's the big battle in the future will be in Congress. That's so kind of irrelevant. It's really the media and those who form the culture, you know? So that'll be very interesting to see.